Chapter 29. They crashed in Boxer's home on Swan Street in Northwest Washington. 20 years ago, the neighborhood had been a shithole filled with whores and drug dealers. Now you couldn't touch a house for less than $1 million, and $1 million would be a steal. Jonathan had been here before, but the others had not, and he enjoyed seeing their reactions to the place. Nobody expected Big Guy to be a collector of fine art and antiques. What amused Jonathan was the relative scale of the house versus its occupant. The federal-style townhouse was over a century old. At the time of its construction, no architect could have anticipated an occupant of Big Guy's dimensions. While the ceilings were high to manage the summer heat, the rooms themselves and the archways leading to them all seemed too small. Every step Boxers took seemed to test the structural integrity of the floor joists. The sleeping arrangements had been sparse. Big Guy took his own room, of course, and Gale got the spare bedroom, leaving Dawkins and Jonathan to share space on the living room floor. Not that it mattered for the 2 hours that they'd allotted themselves for shut-eye. Big Guy awoke first, came downstairs fully dressed and headed for the kitchen, where he put on a pot of coffee and scrambled a dozen eggs. He even set the kitchen table for all four of them.
"I can do more than just kill people and break things," Big Guy said when Gale expressed her surprise that he was so gracious.
"Yeah, but which do you prefer?"
Jonathan teased, earning himself a one-fingered wave. By 8 o'clock, they were ready to roll, but with nowhere to roll to. "Nothing on the news this morning about an attack," Dawkins said. "That's got to be good, right?"
"Better than bad," Jonathan agreed.
Boxers had converted the basement level of his house into an office and play space. Beginning straight up at 0800, the four of them sat in black leather lounge chairs, staring at a 60-inch flat-screen television, where they hooked into a video conference with Venice.
"Good morning, Mother Hen,"
Jonathan said as Venice settled into her seat in the war room. She sipped her coffee.
"I suppose," she said. "How are you all?" "Anxious for this to be done," Gale said. "Be careful what you wish for," Venice said.
Jonathan asked, "Have the Kadyrov brothers shown up anywhere in the last few hours?"
"First of all," she said, "you'd think that in these days of heightened awareness for terrorist threats and the like, that the second largest transportation system in the United States would have a reliable network of security cameras, wouldn't you?"
Jonathan said,
"I certainly would."
Because it was the right thing to say, and Venice was clearly at the beginning of a roll.
"Well, you'd be wrong," she said. "Half of the cameras are offline, and half of the ones still in service have lenses so filthy that you can barely see through them."
"This is coming around to an answer, right?"
Boxers asked.
"Do not press me this morning, Big Guy," she threatened. "I am not in the mood."
"Yet the question remains,"
Boxers mumbled.
"Your microphone is better than you apparently believe it is," Venice said.
Jonathan spread his arms, as if declaring a base runner safe. Time to let that go.
"But to answer your question," Venice said, "I've caught snippets of them in various places downtown over the past 24 hours. For example, I know they had a late lunch yesterday from a food truck in Farragut Square, and it might give you a chill to know that each of them is carrying a blue backpack, the kind college kids take to classes with them."
"Food trucks have security video feeds?" Dawkins asked.
"No, but the Army-Navy Club across the street does," Venice said. "From there they headed north." "Farragut has two metro stations," Gale said, "north and west. The park is immediately adjacent to Farragut West."
"We should check that out," Dawkins said.
"That was yesterday," Jonathan said.
"They could have planted it then."
"Be too risky,"
Boxers said.
Someone would find it. At least they'd have to assume that. Maybe they were just casing the location.
Maybe they were just eating lunch, Jonathan said. Ven, do you have any evidence that they went into the station?
No, that's one of the unreliable camera systems. Which happens to be closest to the White House, Gale said.
Venice said, they did go into Farragut North, though. I think I was able to capture their fare card. If that's the case, then they got off at Bethesda.
You said you think you captured their fare card, Jonathan said.
It's an imprecise science, she said. I could see them go through the turnstile on the security video, and then I was able to see which card numbers went through at the same time. The presumption is that the timestamps on the video and the turnstiles are synced up. She rolled her eyes. It also assumes that no one else was using a different turnstile at the same time. As I said, it's imprecise.
Bethesda? Jonathan said.
There's a lot of shopping and restaurants there.
Walter Reed is there, too,
Boxer said, referring to the Walter Reed National Military Medical Center, formerly known as the National Naval Medical Center. Something tightened in Jonathan's gut.
Ah, shit. That'd be a hell of a target.
I've already thought of that, Vinice said. Three things. First, the closest stop to Walter Reed is actually for NIH, National Institutes for Health. Second, there's no evidence of them being there. And third, how would they get in, even if they did get there? It's a military facility.
She was right. They needed to stick with their original guesswork. Every place in the D.C. area had terrific potential as a target.
So have we seen anything of the brothers after they got off the metro in Bethesda?
By then it was getting pretty dark, Vinice said. Street cameras aren't all that useful, and the vast majority of the business cameras are either not tied into a network or subscribed to a service I can't tap into.
Is there a service you can't tap into? Jonathan teased.
I'm sure there must be, she replied with a smile.
Gale said,
so what do we do now? If we're right that they're going to target rush hour, this afternoon is a long time from now.
I say we alert the FBI and let them take the lead on this, Dawkins said.
We can't do that, Vinice said. And we've already discussed it, Gale said.
I'm less sure about that than I used to be, Jonathan said. The stakes are just too high. We at least need to share what we know. Wolverine can figure it out from there.
Think this through, Dig,
Boxer said.
There's a lot of underlying intel that we can't share.
Wolverine has never demanded that we share means and methods, Jonathan said. I don't expect her to start now.
Have you ever stood between her and thousands of people dying? Dawkins asked.
Listen, Thor, Jonathan said. You don't know what you don't know.
He looked into the camera, and by extension at Vinice.
Contact our special friend. Tell Wolfie that we need to meet at location Bravo as soon as she can make it. Make sure that everyone knows how important it is.
The Cathedral of St. Matthew the Apostle dominated its section of Rhode Island Avenue in Northwest Washington. More or less equidistant from the Farragut North and DuPont Circle metro stations. The seat of the Archdiocese of Washington had recently undergone an extensive renovation, during which FBI Director Irene Rivers had managed to re-engineer Our Lady's Chapel to the left of the nave to be one of the most acoustically secure spots in North America. Jamming signals emitted from behind the elaborate mosaic work made electronic eavesdropping impossible, and when Wolverine was present, her security detail kept curious eyes away. In a city that was awash in skiffs, secure compartmented information facilities, this was the only one that was unknown to but a handful of people, all of them within the Bureau, plus a tiny few outsiders, all of whom worked for Security Solutions. Jonathan arrived at the church early, not because being first was important, but because the ticking clock in his head was pounding ever harder. He didn't wait in Our Lady's chapel, though. He didn't want to bring undue attention to himself, and he likewise didn't want to spin up Irene's security detail when they arrived. Instead, he slid into one of the pews in the sanctuary and had a chat with God. Raised as a Catholic in a household run by a career criminal, Jonathan considered his relationship with the church to be a rocky one, but he'd survived too many close calls that should have killed him not to think that God had a plan for him and looked out for him. This morning he prayed to be right in his guesswork, or totally wrong about the whole plan to attack with nerve agent. Either was fine. He prayed that God would help him make the right decisions with his team and help all of them stay out of the way of stupid decisions. He'd taken a position near the rear of the sanctuary where he would be more likely to see or hear the doors open when Wolverine arrived. He was thrilled when her team came through the doors 10 minutes early. Irene Rivers looked to be somewhere between annoyed and angry as she allowed herself to be led and followed by her detail as they walked directly to Our Lady's chapel. She held a thin manila envelope in her right hand as she walked, and it occurred to Jonathan that he could not remember the last time he saw her empty-handed. He rose from his pew and fell in line behind the rear guard of her detail. Sensing the presence, and probably a threat, the guard turned and braced to intercept Jonathan. Then his features relaxed a little.
"Remember me?" Jonathan said. "I'm like a bad penny. I'm the reason your boss is here."
The guy turned, and Wolverine was already waving Jonathan forward.
"Thank you, guys," she said to her detail. "He's fine."
As Jonathan passed, her detail turned away from the chapel to look out into the sanctuary, doing their best impersonations of wooden soldiers. Irene took a seat in front of the beckoning statue of Mary, who was reaching out to worshippers with one hand while showing the way to heaven with the other.
"It's a busy day, Digger," she said, getting right to it. "What has Father Dom in such a lather?"
"Your day's likely to get a lot longer," Jonathan said.
"Oh, Lord, what did you do?"
"Such respect I get," Jonathan said through a smile. "I haven't done anything yet. Well, today."
Over the course of 10 minutes, he caught her up on the details of rescuing the Kendall boys.
"Well, that's wonderful news," Irene said when he was done.
"Your tone makes it sound less than wonderful," Jonathan said.
"Connie Kendall rescinded her agreement to accept immunity in return for testifying against the Cortez cartel," Irene said.
She pushed an errant strand of pale red hair away from her eye.
"Apparently, someone told her that her children had been kidnapped, and she clammed up. I wonder who did that?"
The question was an accusation.
"You really don't know?" Jonathan said. "It wasn't from me, that's for sure. It was a guard."
Irene scowled.
"And you know this how?"
Jonathan folded his arms and crossed his legs, intentional body language to tell her she'd reached the edge of the intel real estate that she could visit.
"One day, Wolfie, when you're done with official Washington, you're going to have to come and play with the cool kids."
"Tomorrow is sounding good to me," she quipped,
and she turned her attention to her file folder, some body language of her own.
"I haven't yet gotten to the reason I'm here," Jonathan said. "How about the courtesy of a little eye contact?"
She made a show of closing the folder and putting it on her lap. Then she pasted a clownish smile on her face.
"Is this sufficient?"
"God, you're pretty when you're bitchy," Jonathan said.
Her eyes darkened.
"I dare you to say that again."
He moved along.
"Okay, here's the thing. Armand Cortez had nothing to do with kidnapping those boys. It turns out he actually liked the kids and fully expected Connie to spill her guts to you guys. Irene's face was a mask of confusion.
Who kidnapped them, then?
Jonathan smirked. Remember the Jungle Tigers cartel?
I thought you destroyed them.
I couldn't destroy what I couldn't see, Jonathan said. A thug named Quinto Alvarez survived, apparently, and he's working to bring them back to their former greatness, and they're funding it with nerve agent.
Her jaw went slack. Nerve agent is a big term, she said. What do you mean?
I mean the big stuff. VX.
Oh, shit.
Irene spat.
Then she nodded at the statue of Mary. Sorry.
Then she muttered,
I never did believe that we got all of that junk out of Mexico.
Her scowl returned.
Wait, what does this have to do with Connie Kendall and her children?
Apparently her husband, Craig, was the mule used to distribute the nerve gas to their customers in America.
They had customers in the U.S. for nerve gas. Who?
Chechens. Irene closed her eyes and brought a hand to her head.
Oh, God, no. Those guys are ruthless.
Tell me about it, Jonathan said. The place we rescued the Kendall boys from was one of the cells they were using to stockpile the VX and assemble the devices. Irene's shoulders sagged.
Oh, shit, 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 shit! And, Holy Mother, even you have to be saying the same thing. Digger, please tell me that these cell members are among the bodies you tell me that I will find in Blanton, Tennessee.
Some, but not all, Jonathan said. Again, I can't get rid of what I can't see. Two of them had already left by the time we got there. They left behind a ton of shit they hadn't yet used.
A thought bloomed in Irene's head. Blanton, Tennessee, she said. Dead cows?
And three dead people, Jonathan said.
Okay, now I'm connecting the dots, Irene said. Why did it not occur to me that you had something to do with that?
Jonathan considered correcting the record that he had no hand in that particular aspect, but what was the point? He explained, The Chechens who got away are twins, Kasan and Aslan Kadyrov. Both are on the watch lists. Both came into the country through Texas.
Of course they did, Irene said. How do you know this when I don't?
Because you follow rules, he said with a grin. Rules have never been my strong suit. Now, here's the bad part.
Oh, holy crap, you haven't gotten to the bad part yet?
They're going to hit one of the main metro stations at rush hour.
Today?
We think so. Irene shifted in her chair so she could drill him with her gaze.
You think so? What the hell does that mean?
It means that I don't know for sure. They left their place yesterday, and we know that they were roaming around D.C. yesterday. It makes no sense for them to draw this kind of thing out too long.
As the shock passed, skepticism fell in behind. How do you know they're going to hit the metro system?
Because we found papers related to the system in their house. They were the only elements in the whole place that were carefully stacked.
She stared, as if deciding whether to have him committed.
And it makes the most sense, he added. Hearing the words articulated made him realize how stupid they sounded.
He watched as Irene's jaw muscles flexed and unflexed. Damn it, Digger! What am I supposed to do with this?
He shrugged. I don't know, he said. Maybe I just wanted to share the wealth. Can you get the transit authority to shut down the system?
No!
Irene cringed at the tenor of her own voice.
Even if the threat were definite and known, that would be a tall order. But on a rumor? On intuition? Absolutely not.
Raise awareness levels? He suggested.
That's not possible, she said. After a decade of Condition Orange, after a decade of crying wolf 24/7, nobody listens to threat levels. We can't even get people to evacuate their below-sea-level homes in front of a Cat 5 storm.
Jonathan felt deflated. At least you can't accuse me of keeping you in the dark.
This time, Irene corrected, this one time you bring me into the light, I don't even have anything to bring to court for a warrant.
It felt as if the meeting was about to end, but Jonathan felt uncomfortable about that. He steeled himself with a huge breath. There's one more thing you need to know.
Oh, God, please make it stop.
We can follow them.
Who?
The Kadyrov brothers.
What do you mean you can follow them?
Jonathan quibbled. Follow is the wrong word. We can track them.
Irene exuded skepticism. How?
Promise me you won't ask for details.
Is this about breaking more rules?
Oh, hell yes. Mother Hannah stumbled upon some kick-ass facial recognition software. When they pass in front of a camera, even a passive camera, we can snap their photo and then track them on a timeline.
Any idea how many laws you're breaking there?
Not a hard number, no. I can share their picture if you like, but I can't share the technology we used to get it.
No,
she said. She was beyond dismissive in her tone.
What would I do with it? I need warrants and court orders to do what you do on a whim. I don't want to be left holding your smoking gun.
I don't get it, Wolfie.
Jonathan's patience had eroded to nothing.
I'm telling you that this thing is going to happen. If not today, then tomorrow or the next day. What I'm hearing from you is a willingness to just let it happen.
I have no choice, Dig.
She had tears in her eyes, something he didn't think he'd ever seen before.
Among the stuff I hate about this godforsaken job, do you know what is the worst? The fact that we are not prepared to prevent crime. No police agency can do that. We investigate crimes after they happen and do our best to put the perpetrators away. We're janitors, Dig, not operators, and it tears at me every single day.
Jonathan had never seen this side of Irene before. It unnerved him a little.
Do you have any idea how much I wish my bureau could do what you do? Do you know what a burden that goddamn Constitution is? But guys with long hair and buckles on their shoes decided a long time ago that we would be a nation of laws, and that even the worst of the worst have rights. Overall, it's a pretty great system, don't you think?
Jonathan didn't answer what he knew had to be a rhetorical question.
So here we are, where we've been so many times in the past. I will cover for your carnage in Tennessee as I covered for your carnage at the foster home, and I pray that you figure out a way to stop the sons of bitches before they can attack my neighbors. If you can, then I'll cover for you again. If you can't, well, just step out of the way and let me do my cleanup job.